The judge's decision, it's an act of violence. It's an attack on our identity, our spirit.
The prospect of having private organizations determine one's gender is truly horrifying.
LGBT movement, basically, in the last couple of years, just added on to the broader social movement.
How do you feel about the fact that Valentine's Day is generally portrayed as a heterosexual holiday?
I think that sucks.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Massachusetts top court says marriage means marriage. A judicially assaulted Canadian trans woman fights back, and Croatian queer activists credit progressive connections for progress. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 7th, 2004. Massachusetts top court this week clarified that only full equal marriage rights for same-gender couples under the same name applied to marriage for heterosexual couples is acceptable under the state constitution. The Supreme Judicial Court had ruled in November that it is illegal discrimination for the state to deny marriage to gays and lesbians. The Massachusetts Senate asked the court if reserving the term marriage exclusively for heterosexual couples while creating civil unions with equivalent legal status for gays and lesbians would meet constitutional muster. The final sentence of the High Court's majority opinion is, the answer to the question is no. And because this is a matter of state law, there is no further legal appeal.
That was the same 4-3 majority that originally ruled for marriage equality in Goodrich versus Department of Public Health. A dissenting opinion noted that requiring the same-gender institution be called marriage could actually prevent Massachusetts from trying to compensate those couples for the unequal treatment they receive from the federal government and other states. But the majority found that the Senate bill maintains an unconstitutional, inferior, and discriminatory status for same-sex couples in violation of constitutional rights to due process and equal protection under the law. Rejecting arguments of tradition, the ruling declared, this is not a matter of social policy but of constitutional interpretation, noting that marriage involves intangible benefits as well as tangible ones. The court found the civil union's proposal even exaggerated the discriminatory nature of the existing law, writing that because the proposed law, by its express terms, forbids same-sex couples entry into civil marriage, it continues to relegate same-sex couples to a different status. Group classifications based on unsupportable distinctions, such as that embodied in the proposed bill, are invalid under the Massachusetts Constitution. The history of our nation has demonstrated that separate is seldom, if ever, equal.
The phrase separate but equal and its refutation refer to the famous U.S. Supreme Court decision in Brown versus the Board of Education that struck down racial segregation. As it happens, the 50th anniversary of that landmark ruling falls on the same mid-May date that the Goodrich ruling will become effective, and Massachusetts gay and lesbian couples can obtain marriage licenses. Even though State Attorney General Thomas Riley opposes marriage equality, he announced, "The Supreme Judicial Court has clearly spoken. Same-sex couples have the constitutional right to marry under Massachusetts law."
Other leading politicians in the state are scrambling to find some loophole, but there's general agreement they will fail to avert or delay legal gay and lesbian marriages. According to a footnote in the court's decision, the way to succeed would be to stop providing marriages to heterosexuals as well. Realistically, opponents' best hope appears to be a state constitutional amendment to override the court, but although that process has already started, it would take about 3 years to complete. Even with that amendment, many believe any marriages contracted in the interim could not be retroactively negated. Massachusetts Republican Governor Mitt Romney insisted that the voice of the people has not been heard and wrote an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal calling on the public to actively lobby at every level of government to, in his words, protect marriage. He did say that it is important that the defense of marriage not become an attack on gays, on singles, or on non-traditional couples. Even before the latest ruling was handed down, Massachusetts' Democratic Party adopted a resolution opposing any constitutional amendment that would discriminate against gays and lesbians, including a marriage ban.
United States Senator John Kerry, who represents Massachusetts and currently is the leading hopeful for the Democratic presidential nomination, objected to the court's ruling. While calling civil unions the right answer for equal treatment for gays and lesbians, he insists that he opposes marriage for them. He declared that he will fight any effort to identify him with so-called gay marriage. Republican U.S. President George W. Bush issued a statement calling the latest ruling deeply troubling. Echoing earlier statements, he wrote, "Marriage is a sacred institution between a man and a woman. If activist judges insist on redefining marriage by court order, the only alternative will be the constitutional process. We must do what is legally necessary to defend the sanctity of marriage." Some conservatives do not believe the separation of church and state under the U.S. Constitution applies to such issues. The Massachusetts clarification definitely heats up the issue not only for the U.S. presidential campaign, but also the movement to add a same-gender marriage ban to the U.S. Constitution. While the so-called Federal Marriage Amendment already introduced in the House of Representatives has not been given a high priority for action this session, Republican Senator from Texas John Cornyn was spurred by the decision to announce he'll lead the proposed amendment through the upper house.
And of course, more than a dozen states are currently debating constitutional amendments to prevent same-gender marriages. This week, one such measure was passed by the Indiana State Senate by a whopping 6-1 margin. But while Republicans control that Senate, Democrats control the House, where the proposal is unlikely to reach a floor vote. Democratic Governor Joe Kernan has called the move unnecessary.
Ohio this week became the 38th state to enact legislation denying legal recognition to same-gender marriages, as a bill received both its final okay from the legislature and Republican Governor Bob Taft's signature. While typical so-called Defense of Marriage Acts stop there, Ohio's goes another step to explicitly prohibit state agencies from extending spousal benefits to unmarried domestic partners, regardless of gender.
Utah enacted legislation beginning more than a decade ago to deny legal recognition to same-gender marriages that existed nowhere in the world at the time and has expanded that law since. Last week, all but one state senator voted for a bill to broaden the scope of same-gender relationships that will not be recognized to include civil unions and common law marriages.
A Washington state appellate court this week upheld a ruling imposing on a lesbian breakup the same property division requirements applied to divorcing married couples. It's believed to be the first such appeals court decision in that state. A 3-judge panel found the couple's decade together to be sufficiently marriage-like to provide equitable relief on dissolution. The opinion said that whether same-sex couples can legally marry is for the legislature to decide, but the rule that the courts must examine the relationship and the property accumulations and make a just and equitable disposition of the property is a judicial, not a legislative, extension of the rights and protections of marriage to an intimate unmarried couple.
And finally, Fort Lauderdale Police Detective Mike Nahum may be too sexy for his job, as an appellate court in Florida heard last month. In an undercover sting at a club, Nahum asked Julio Blanco if he liked to party. To Nahum, that meant drugs, but it meant sex to Blanco, a self-described lonely gay man. Nahum pressed Blanco to buy some cocaine for him, and Blanco said no 3 times and even tried to leave before he finally went to the men's room and obtained some methamphetamines for Nahum. Broward Circuit Court Judge Susan Lebeau had dismissed the charges on grounds of entrapment when she heard the case in 2002. She said then, "The detective walked in dressed in a T-shirt and jeans, and for the record, he was a very attractive man." Blanco's defense attorney, Kevin Kulik, seized on that phrase, "for the record," and requested and received from Judge Lebeau an official finding of Nahum's attractiveness. It isn't every man who has a court declaration of his good looks, but it didn't please Nahum, who insisted he hadn't made any effort to make himself attractive to Blanco. The appellate majority agreed there was entrapment, though, citing Nahum's nonverbal communication.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 7th, 2004. Written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Rick Watts.
I've only got a couple of minutes to remind you that 2003 was one heck of a queer year, and that we've got the sounds to prove it. Steve Pride recalls the year's most memorable queer-themed offerings on the big and small screen.
It actually contains no sinking ocean liners, no high-speed car chases.
My film is about a few years that I spent pretending to be somebody else before I went to prison.
We're friends of 43 years, and we're lovers of 27 years.
It centers around a gay male couple who are enforcers for the mafia.
You wouldn't even think, you know, 20 years ago that you'd ever would have this many gay and lesbian films.
Our film is about Bayard Rustin, this gay African-American civil rights hero.
This is a queer buddy movie.
It's a social, gender, sexuality, drama comedy.
Why are you hiding in the potting shed?
I wasn't hiding.
It's all about identity. It's all about visibility.
The producers of Audiophile choose their favorite out music of the year.
I want to double my wardrobe. Leave a seat up late at night.
Say a prayer for me, Sarah.
I like a man who is crazy about me.
Ginger's my favorite thing.
I'll cross into your heart if you'll cross into mine.
I listen to the wind of my soul.
He's the best darn thing to come down the pike in a good long while. I like Mike.
And there's a keepsake collection of the biggest queer news stories of 2003.
It says intended bridegroom and intended bride. How are intended spouse and intended spouse?
The Supreme Court says that we matter and we're valuable.
Being gay is not a crime.
To press forward with this consecration will be to turn our backs on Almighty God.
It's not about me. It's about so many other people at the margins.
Finally, all families in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts will have the opportunity to be equal families. Under the law.
One or more of these 2003 queer audio history and culture CDs can be yours. For all the details, log on to thiswayout.org. We've got a rare look inside the rights movement in Croatia and a seasonal greeting from San Francisco later in the program. Members and allies of Vancouver's transgender community are preparing for a full-scale battle over the right of trans women to participate in women-only spaces. In December, a British Columbia Supreme Court judge ruled that Kimberly Nixon did not have the right to be a counselor at a women-only rape crisis center, even though she herself is a survivor of male violence. Since then, an appeal has been launched, and feminist and gay rights organizations have expressed interest in joining the case. This Way Out's Heather Kitching was on hand in late January for the community's first strategy session.
It has been a very difficult last month. It's been a very difficult last 9 years, actually.
Kimberly Nixon is speaking to a community forum in Vancouver on the rights of transgendered women in women-only space.
As I remember that evening, it was like looking around this room.
Just days before Christmas, a BC Supreme Court judge ruled that Nixon, a transsexual woman, did not have the right to volunteer for the Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter. Tonight, about 50 trans people and allies have gathered to strategize about what to do next.
The judge's decision, it's an act of violence. It's an attack on our identity, our spirit, our sense of selves, our self-esteem, our us as human beings.
The case dates back to 1995, when Nixon, herself a survivor of an abusive relationship, decided she wanted to give something back to the community that helped her put her life back together. She applied to be a volunteer counselor for rape relief and passed their initial screening. But when a trainer deduced that Nixon had not lived her whole life in a female body, she was told she wasn't welcome. Nixon filed a human rights complaint, and in 2002 was awarded the highest award ever for injury to dignity by a human rights tribunal. But Rape Relief appealed, and on December 19th, the BC Supreme Court threw out the Human Rights Tribunal's ruling.
The decision in the Nixon case is shocking to read, frankly.
Barbara Findlay is Kimberly Nixon's attorney.
There's a line in the decision, for example, where the judge says, the respondent, Rape Relief, agreed with me that their view about the necessity of having only women-born women in their service was a matter of an article of faith by which I understood them to mean something that was intuitive and didn't require evidentiary verification. It is actually one of the best definitions of prejudice, which is what the Human Rights Code is supposed to protect against, that I've ever heard.
Rape Relief states in court documents that they believe that only women who experience life as a woman from birth are suitable counselors for their organization. They say that women who experienced male violence may be traumatized by coming in contact with someone who is not, quote, unambiguously female. They also say it's important that a counselor be able to relate to a woman's experience of sexism from birth. But Nixon, who went on to volunteer for two other women's organizations and who was described in court documents as, quote, a superior trainee, begs to differ.
As a feminist and in my experience in working with other women, women are their own best experts on their own experience. It's not about stratifying pain. Every woman's experience is different. This is a double standard. I have a history as a woman. It has been from birth. It's a lot different growing up as a girl in a boy's body. You know, the torment, the pain, being forced to participate in the world as someone that you're not. We don't have a choice as children to do anything about it. We have to live in silence. That's where I see it being a double standard, because I think if you have control over something, then you can blame, maybe. But when you don't have any control over it and you wish more than life itself that it was different, do you know there's a huge void in my life from what I've missed? There's a lot more to it than Justice Edwards' limited vision, I guess.
Another part of the decision that's very troubling is that, as you know, there are basically three choices for who gets to decide who's a woman. The woman herself, the state, that is, what do you get on your birth certificate, and Rape Relief. And the judge decided that given those three choices, he would vote with Rape Relief. The prospect of having private organizations determine one's gender from time to time is truly horrifying. But the implications are even more scary, because it means that organizations would also be entitled to decide, for example, what someone's race was, whether they were brown enough or black enough to count as a member of the race of which they claim membership. They could decide whether somebody was, oh, gay enough, for example. It's, I'm looking for a sufficiently horrified word to describe what that would mean in the overall administration of human rights.
Rape Relief has the legal right to discriminate against men under a section of the Human Rights Code that allows groups who seek to advance the issues of marginalized communities to exclude people who are not members of those communities. However, as an organization that provides a public service, they are otherwise bound by the Human Rights Code and are prohibited from discriminating among the women they come in contact with. Findlay says this prohibits them from discriminating against Nixon.
They don't get to exclude Kimberly, we say, because Kimberly's a woman. Now, is Kimberly a woman? Is Kimberly not a woman? Whole books can be written on the subject and have been, but what we say is they don't get to be the ones to decide who a woman is. On a feminist view of the world, on any progressive view of the world, one of the fundamental tenets of liberation has to be that we get to decide for ourselves who we are.
Nixon went on to volunteer for Battered Women's Support Services in Vancouver and Peggy's Place, a women-only transition house. She and Findlay have appealed the court decision to the BC Court of Appeal and anticipate that it will reach the Supreme Court of Canada. Meanwhile, Nixon says she still wishes that Rape Relief would change its position and adds that her heart remains open, and it is for all the right reasons. For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
Hi, this is Terrence Stamp, Bernadette in The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, on This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio news magazine.
We'll seal this week's show with a Valentine's kiss, but first... Activists from around the world got a chance to hear about each other's struggles and victories at the 22nd World Conference of the International Lesbian and Gay Association held in Manila late last year. Jelena Pastic of the Croatian group Contra reported on the complex relationship between queer rights and other social justice movements there.
I would like to stress out is maybe the alliances between different movements. And their connection to achievement of sexual social justice. When I was thinking about what I would like to stress the most, I was really excited about the example of Croatia and the way that the alliances were made in Croatia. And then just as I was approaching the hotel on the stairs, I remembered two examples that are not so great and that should not be praised. However, I still want to talk about it. Social movements in former Yugoslavia, as such, Balkans is a little bit special case because of some other Central and Eastern European countries, because of the war that was going on. Due to the war situation, there was many NGOs and movements that sprang out of it were fighting against the war. Therefore, there was a lot of feminist organizations that were founded opposing to the war, as well as the peace movement. And what happened is LGBT movement basically in the last couple of years just added on to all these movements that existed. So there was already a base of open space in a way for LGBT movement to come and to add and to become part of the broader social movement. I think one of the best examples of that is the Pride, the first Pride in Zagreb that was organized a year and a half ago, which out of 300 people that were there, 80% of the people were not LGBT people. There were different activists from anti-war movement from 91. There were different people from feminist organizations, youth, anarchists, human rights activists. So Pride would have not happened without them. I think that is the alliances. Such alliances are very important for sexual politics. The interconnection. And the two examples I remember that are not that great is first that happened a couple of years ago when we were supposed to pass a law on gender equality, and there were two drafts being prepared. One of them has been prepared by Alliance of Students and the other one by a feminist organization. So the students basically took the Western model and they translated the law and proposed it. And the feminist organization took the law, except they took out sexual orientation out of it because they were afraid that it was not going to pass. There's one example, and then the other example is that there's in Croatia a lot of progress has been happening for different reasons. We have five laws actually on the basis of sexual orientation has been introduced into five laws in the last year. And we also have law on same-sex civil union. So there are different reasons for that. But at the moment, the prohibition on the basis of sexual orientation was supposed to be introduced into the labor law. Gay and lesbian activists agreed to shut their mouths, basically, although the labor law was horrible. So they, in a way, they disregarded the fact that the labor law is very bad for the workers and for all workers, including LGBT people, and actually went for the option of having sexual orientation included.
That was Croatian activist Jelena Pastic of Contra speaking at the 22nd World Conference of the International Lesbian and Gay Association, as recorded and edited by Uma Kali Shakti. Romance was in the air at the San Francisco LGBT Community Center when Ala Pekareva and Heather Regal of the Out Loud Queer Youth Radio Project paid a visit to collect sentiments for this audio Valentine.
We've come a long, long way together, through the hard times and the good. I have to celebrate you, baby. I have to praise you like I should.
What do you think of? What comes to mind first?
Romance.
What kind of romance?
Squishy love, little I love you high school letters, and you know.
Candy and roses. Just like being with your loved one.
What comes to your mind when you think of Valentine's Day?
roses, candy, and very, very, very much sex.
She's point blank.
I really like your honesty.
What immediately pops to into your head?
Your teacher's forcing you to make cards or buy cards for 24 other people that you don't really like. That's what pops into my head.
I think of that too. Any special plans, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm probably just going to go to my friend's house and we're going to watch movies and eat a lot.
Yeah, that's always a good plan, like sappy romantic movies, that kind of thing.
They're probably going to end up being Johnny Depp movies because we both have an obsession.
I don't know as of yet. I don't know what's planned for Valentine's Day. I've got a guy that I've been seeing for about a week now, and I don't know exactly what he's wanting to do as of yet, so...
Yeah, spend it with my queer friends. Have a queer old time.
Pick a memory. If you could make one up, like your fantasy Valentine's Day, what would it be?
I don't know. I guess my friends would also have dates just like they always do, but then I would have somebody to go with too, and so we'd all go to dinner and have fun. And yeah.
So just one final thing that we've been asking is, how do you feel about the fact that Valentine's Day is generally portrayed as a heterosexual holiday?
I think that sucks.
Why so?
Because the heart, the little shape of the heart, came from a vagina. That's the shape that it truly, that's where the heart, the fake heart shape came from.
Definitely, yeah.
It did, and I think there's nothing more beautiful than two vaginas together. Don't you?
No, that's probably like the best thing I've ever heard.
How would you like it to be portrayed? I mean, not just male people.
Like, say if like downtown in Castro would like put on this Valentine's like thing and like a parade, and like we like dress in our boxer shorts and all this stuff and like going marching down the street, that'd be so fun.
I do tech crew for a theater, and so there's a production on Valentine's Day, so I'll be doing that. It's called The Vagina Monologues.
That is excellent.
Yeah.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Graham Underhill, Fensberry, Rex Walkner, Heather Kitching, Uma Kalishaki, and Ala Pekareva, and Heather Regal contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle and to Noah Miller and the Out Loud Queer Youth Radio Project. Jessica Xavier and Fatboy Slim performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. To find out how you can help keep this program on the air and get our 2003 Year in Review programs on CD for your help, please log on to thiswayout.org. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 4ZZZ Brisbane, Queensland, WEFT Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, KRZA Alamosa, Colorado, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And when we say stay tuned, we indeed mean stay tuned.